You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
Now, we'll take a break from our usual episodes to bring you this intermission-sode. I mean, Tony nominations are going to happen on the regular schedule that we're used to.
Okay.
You know, so like the week of my birthday and all that.
Am I the only person that's kind of just over it?
No, you're not. you're not.
I felt like
I got really. No, don't feel bad.
Okay.
Don't feel bad. Like I used to get. Man, I used to get so excited.
Me too.
And it has been honestly for me personally since COVID.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like all these people were suffering, all of these actors, all of these stagehands, all of these businesses, and they just weren't taken care of.
No, they weren't. Well, and now it's like there's this very false kind of expectation that Broadway's back and we're really celebrating it, but you're not. Because if you were truly celebrating the fact that Broadway was back, you would have been taking care of the people that were out of their jobs, but you also would just be celebrating those people right now and not the industry, because the industry sucks. I'm sorry. It's done. I hate it so much. There is so much wrong. It's so very much like the scene in Wizard of Oz where they pull away the curtain.
Oh, yeah.
And you see this tiny little man talking in his big boy voice, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's now that we have peeled away the curtain and we're now seeing what they actually think of us as audience members and as performers and as stage managers and as ushers and as fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
They actually see of us. And that doesn't, like, that's, you know, we're a marginalized group just as a whole, but
right.
Then you've also got these diverse margins, you know, in the margins.
Yeah. Yeah.
That are being treated even less fairly. Or without a thought at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, and it's so like, I just look at it and I'm like, what? I loved it so much, but I, now that, you know, that you see more of it and then you start to just hate it. I'm sad.
It is. I have even more on that. I want to talk a little bit about.
Okay.
Let's just say hi, friends.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, this is what we do. We've been chatting before and then Ebony will push record, but we'll still just be chatting.
Yeah.
And so like, we don't just take a minute to like delineate, oh, this is the start of the show. So you got heated, Pamela, right from the very beginning. And I'm sorry.
But they're, no, don't be, that's what they're here for. They know what's going to happen. It's every episode we do this.
So welcome.
What's up, Theater Geeks? Thank you so much for tuning in.
You get a nice little short one today. It's a little intermission sode.
Yep. It'll be good. So just like Pamela was saying, so Broadway's back. We did a whole episode on Broadway's back, but is it better?
Right. And I guess that we're kind of still answering that question as a no right now.
Right. Yeah.
But there is some excitement because you mentioned just before we started recording that there are 14 shows that are currently in previews or that are starting to go into previews soon.
Right. So
14, that's 1-4.
Crazy. It's
that
crazy.
Is nuts.
They're all meant to open in the month of April.
Okay.
Which the day that we're recording this is it's March 27th.
Yep.
A bunch of them are in previews already. Some are like starting up in the next couple of days. Some of those that I do want to talk about, and we're also going to kind of go back to the little rant we had at the beginning.
Yeah.
But some of those shows that I personally am looking forward to are like the Macbeth with Ruth Negga. I love Ruth Negga.
Yeah.
I just, side note, we're also recording this on the day of the Oscars. I would
Again,
just like,
it's just another like industry
but
that I'm
wait,
just done
but
with.
Just, yeah. I know, but just wait. Okay. But just let me finish. Okay. Because if you have not seen it's on Netflix, it is called Passing. Okay. It is a movie with Ruth Negga and Tessa Thompson.
Okay.
And it was directed by Rebecca. Lord help me. I'm going to look it up. She's an actor. I love her. I can't think of her name right now. I don't know. Rebecca.
I'm looking it up right now.
Hall. Rebecca Hall.
Okay.
It is. Watch it. Everyone okay. should be watching this movie because it is a window into colorism that a lot of folks don't have to deal with.
Oh, I heard about this. Yes. I heard about this one. Yes.
It's amazing. And it does have some Oscar nominations. And but I just love Ruth Negga as an actor. Yeah. And so I'm really excited about this Macbeth. If I'm frank, I was actually more excited about her Hamlet, which I missed and okay. sort of got truncated because of COVID. It like came from England to here and sort of got truncated. And so I, of course, I'm more excited because she played Hamlet, right? So she was like the, and so, you know, so this is Daniel Craig, which is fine. It's fine. you know, but like, I'm more excited about her being Lady Macbeth than anything, frankly.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. Another one is The Little Prince. I like that book. It looks really fun, beautiful, and imaginative.
I love the book too. And for those exact reasons, it does, it kind of takes you on this adventure, but you almost get to choose it yourself. Like it's, you put yourself in that role as the little prince. And it's the most, I guess, open-ended fairy tale that I've ever read before. So that's why. Yeah.
That one begins, performances begin on the 29th of March.
Do we know who's in that? I always ask you the question.
I know the answers but too. You could
I'm googling
because I'm just on Playbill for the listings and it's not really giving me casting notices like who's in all the casts.
Let me look on their websites.
Then there's also the play How I Learned to Drive. That's gonna have Mary Louise Parker and David Morse.
Okay.
And a lot of people are excited about that one because they were the originals. When it first premiered. This is Paula Vogel.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Hangman. Okay. I just want to talk about Hangman super briefly because this is one of the plays that was set to open, was set to begin previews and then COVID happened. So it just got obliterated and it was one of the ones that closed. Like they had no intention of bringing it back, but it amazingly, it's like one of those that sort of rose from the dead.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so that one is, well, it looks like performances are scheduled to begin the 8th of April and opening night will be on the 21st.
Okay.
So that's sort of one of the, I want to call some of these the zombie plays.
They rose from the dead. Yes.
Yeah.
Love it.
And then Funny Girl, which is just like, it's funny because when they first announced Funny Girl's coming back, it's like the boy who cried wolf because it has been
like it's been a decade.
Yeah. More than that. I mean, it hasn't been on Broadway since the '60s, right? When it was, the original. So they just every couple of years, Funny Girl's coming back. And I was like, yeah. Actually, you know what it reminded me of the Second Street train that had been talked about for like 80 years or something. And then when they were like, it's coming, people were like, yeah, we'll see. And then it came and you're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess it's here now. And that's helpful. And so it's the same thing with Funny Girl, like Funny Girl's like the Second Street, you know, Second Avenue train. It's like, okay, well, I guess, okay, it's actually all happening. Right.
We'll see.
And performances begin today, March 26th. So
fantastic.
So there you go. And that's going to be Beanie Feldstein, who I like her.
I'm not familiar with her work.
You should.
She's
funny. But I think she was Minnie Faye in Hello Dolly.
We had just missed her.
Yes.
When we went to see it.
I feel that you would love the movie Booksmart. I feel that's right up your alley. It's on Hulu. Okay. You should watch it. And then you will like her and you will understand why people in my house are a fan. I mean, Booksmart was like, I was like, I am grown and I want to jump inside this movie and like hang out with these two nerdy girls who have no idea what they're doing. I just love it.
Okay.
Okay. And then this other one that I'm really excited about because I've talked about her incessantly on this podcast. So for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough is coming back to Broadway. And why I am excited about it is because of who it is going to be directed by. It is going to be directed by a woman who's mostly known for her choreography, Camille A. Brown. So Camille A. Brown is not only choreographing, which she did for the off-Broadway production, which I saw and we talked briefly about on this podcast, but she'll also be directing. This will be like her first time. It's a big deal. What she did with that production was absolutely beautiful. I cannot wait to see what she's going to do with this Broadway production. And so that one I'm really excited about and is another one I want to see. Birthday Candles, which also is a zombie play. it was supposed to come, but COVID. Mm-hmm. And that one stars Deborah Messing.
Okay. I remember hearing about that one as well.
Yep. So that's just like a handful of the ones. I mean, there's Mr. Saturday Night with Billy Crystal, POTUS.
That came up when I was researching the show that I'm doing in the next episode for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Oh, POTUS. Oh, yeah.
I don't think they're related at all. I think maybe it just said Broadway and then that's what the algorithm brought me.
Oh, okay. That's it. Okay. Paradise Square already in previews. We've talked a little bit about that here.
Garth Verbinski.
Yep. Plaza Suite, which is in previews and opens March 28th. That's the one with Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick.
Yep.
And then The Skin of Our Teeth is another one that begins previews on the 1st of April.
So these are mostly plays then.
Let's see.
Funny Girl and Little Prince are both musicals, right?
Right. They are. A Strange Loop, which won the Pulitzer during COVID, is coming and it begins previews April 6th.
Nice.
You all know, like Typecast, the benefit concert, one of the actors who was in there, he won the Drama Desk and he's going to be in this Broadway production of A Strange Loop.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a bunch, some that are super exciting that are coming. And so there's some things to look forward to, but I'm going to go back to our points in the beginning, sort of about the Tony Awards and things are on a regularly scheduled. The first week of May, we'll have nominations as usual. And then the actual production's going to, or the actual award ceremony will happen in June. We're probably not going to go through all the nominations and all that like we usually do. It's just, I think we're both feeling like, here's the thing is like, I want everyone to have these awards. Mm-hmm. I think they work really hard. I think they deserve them. And so I just want to preface whatever we say by saying like, we're not like some bitter, angry people who are like hate awards. It's like, I want folks who've done the work to get their accolades. They need to be get your flowers. I want you to have your flowers. I think the thing that I can at least speak for myself in saying is that what I find frustrating is that these very people who are going to be nominated for awards and who won in the fall when the Tony Awards had a very late show just were not very well supported during COVID. And I was reading an article in the LA Times this week, which honestly, it made me so sad I was unable to finish it. And I know for a lot of other people that they would read it and maybe it would give them more hope, but I'll just speak for myself in saying that I found it very upsetting because this article was about, you know, some of the work I've mentioned about BNR's hero many, many times on this podcast, and just the number of people who are pivoting away from being actors, away yeah. from being musicians, away from being anything arts related. And when you look at like how large the contributions of artists just contribute to the GDP mm-hmm. and how that if arts completely fell, our entire economy would be worthless.
Right.
It's just really upsetting to see how even within their own community, they're just not treated in ways that are helpful when we're in crisis.
Well, let me just put it this way too. As a performer, and I'm just going to say performer because that's what I know.
Yeah.
Even as a performer that is working at the highest tier that you can get in theater, you're still straddling the line of poverty. And one bad week will send you right over, right?
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't a bad week. This was a bad 2 years.
Yeah.
And the support that we received was no better than thoughts and prayers.
Right.
And I'm not a performer currently, but like I do put myself in that situation only because I have friends. I have copious people that I know that were all going through that, right? And that I
felt for them. And you're in equity too still.
And I am, yeah. I've been paying into equity all this time, you know? But it's also, it's just like, it. I look at it from the outside. So I've got this kind of a really nice perspective that I can put on this because I was in it and now I can look at it from the outside and also still get information from the inside of what's going on.
Yeah.
They did very little for us than to say, don't worry, we're behind you. You know, when the shelter, let me get my thoughts together. I'm a little scattered. When the shelter in place first happened, and at 7 o'clock every night, Eastern Standard Time, everyone got out of their houses and started clapping and banging on their pots and pans for the first responders. That all started out really great. But a week went by, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and suddenly you're like, what are we doing this for? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't help anything. It doesn't help anybody. And it doesn't really even tell first responders that we care because nobody is hearing my clapping in the middle of Astoria when the hospital is in Manhattan, right? So like that's kind of what it was. Like it started out swell with the theater, the people that held the reins that have the purse strings, right?
Yeah.
Started out really nice with them telling us all of these wonderful things and saying how much they appreciate us and telling us how much that they're going to be taking care of us and no big deal, right? But then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks started to go by and you're like, well, that doesn't help me. And there were like, if I had been in the situation where I didn't have another job, where I was just auditioning, I was just a performer at the time that the shelter in place happened, I wouldn't have even been able to claim unemployment because I hadn't had a job in theater for an extended amount of time, right? I was working a full-time job, but when I claimed unemployment, it took them several weeks before I even got that first paycheck. So at a certain point in time, we're just going to say, you know what? Shut up. I don't care about your platitudes. Show me the money.
Right.
Show me in action how much you support me as a performer, as a stage manager, as a tech person backstage, as an usher, as a vendor, as a marketing team, like whoever you are within the, and there are so many people, there's so many cogs within this. I'm running out of analogies, but you know, you understand. I think everyone understands where I'm coming from.
It's just,
it's that feeling of like, oh, just shut up. Stop talking about it and do it.
Yeah.
Already. That's kind of what it feels like. I think where I am on the, because I was listening to a story on NPR yesterday about the Academy Awards, about the Oscars specifically, where they're saying that like they're getting rid of so many different categories and then they're opening up for like a people's choice kind of thing through Twitter. so you can like nominate your favorite movie of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Just as a rando person on the street. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Whatever. That's fun.
Yeah.
And then they're going to, you know, have one of these people is going to win the opportunity. One of these people that are put their favorite movie on Twitter is going to win the opportunity to announce the award. So, I mean, the award could go to, I can't even think of movies right now, but like any movie that happened last year, these awards can go to. And so this random person can get up and it's supposed to like spur interest, but it was interesting what the ladies on NPR were saying, because one of them was like, I mean, they're catering now to an audience that was never theirs.
Right.
And they're shoving away the audience that has been with them throughout. Yes.
Yeah.
And that made me think of the Tony Awards too.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that for a long time with the start of like the whole red carpet thing before the Tony Awards. That was when I almost felt like I was being shoved out. You know what? Because like, I don't care about that stuff. I want to see the shows. I want to see the production numbers. And I want to clap for my Audra McDonald's and for my Maren Mazies and for my, well, let's just keep it in the ragtime family, Brian Stokes Mitchell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't.
And that was the best. I still stand by. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. I still stand by the best Tony Awards ever was the one where all the creative arts ones were on PBS. So I was like 2-3 hours of that. I was give it all. I want all of it. And then when they went to like the main award ceremony on CBS, they were also giving you snippets of the plays. I was like, that's what I want. That was the best one.
Then they got rid of the plays altogether. And I'm like, why did you stop doing the plays?
That was the best ever. Yeah.
Totally.
Because it just reminds me a little bit of how we complained about season 2 of Smash and how it just felt like the showrunner didn't understand his audience. It was like he just kept beating us over the head with like what he thought were breadcrumbs. But it was like, dude, listen, the people you think need this don't need this because they're not going to get it. And the people that actually get it, you're just hitting us over the head with. Like, it's like you don't know.
I get it. It's Rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so I'm feeling like that with like these award shows, because I also love film. Like I love film, and I'm nerdy about that too. Listen, I'm just nerdy. And so like when I hear that categories like best score, I freaking love to hear who won best score, because I like to listen to film scores. Yeah. And so I am interested in who wins. Okay.
Yes.
I want to see them go up there, because you know what? They look the most like normal people walking down the street. Like, I'm not going to see Nicole Kidman walk down my street, but that film score person with like their dress from Macy's.
Yes.
Those are my people.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? And so like, you're right. Like they're catering to a group of people who only care about like the Kardashians of the world. Mm-hmm. And honestly, weren't even watching this. It was like the nerdy kids like me who were like, actually ingesting ridiculous amounts of podcasts about how to make a film, and the kids who are watching hours and hours of YouTube and are like taking film courses. Like we're like the nerdy ones who just want to ingest everything we can about film. And so like,
or the little 10-year-old that feels othered by the people around her, and she just wants to see what is possible for her life and what she would enjoy the most. Like that person is important. Even if person didn't actually go on to do anything in theater, the way that the Tony Awards made you feel when you were able to watch those performances, like that is magical.
Yeah.
That's the magic of film. That's the magic of theater. That's the magic of entertainment.
Yeah. And that I will say the thing that I've noticed, with what's happening with the Oscars is it seems to be much more, the annoyance is more audible. I hear more folks talking about it. I see it a lot more places.
Sure.
The podcasts I listen to are complaining about it. And when things like this happen with the Tony Awards, I'll see a bit here or there on Twitter, like when you know, the Tony Awards split, you had to do Paramount Plus and CBS. Yeah. And I was like, after everyone just lost their jobs, now we're doing a paywall. That's what you're doing. That is so tone deaf. I can't even, but I just saw like a handful of people complain about it when really it should have been like the whole industry. But the problem is the industry's so small. And I think folks really feel like if they speak out too much, they won't have work.
Yeah.
And
that's the way that they've always been though, too. Like that is the frustration of it all. And I guess we had spoken about this before. It's like, are we going to come back different? Are we going to be more inclusive? Are we going to be more diverse in not only color, but also body type? Are we going to, you know, not rely completely on the single white male than everybody else on the stage, you know, that kind of stuff that was always really important to us. But you're right in that it's also about listening to the people that are enjoying it the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
And catering to them.
Right. Because you're not going to get like I've heard two other people tell me about also there was like a whole Twitter feed about how it should be parsed out, the Oscars anyway. Because the Tony Awards, I mean, and maybe they're already sort of doing this, right? Is like they're putting behind a paywall the part that like nerdy folks like me really care about. And then like all the shiny glitzy stuff is on CBS. And that's the part that, so maybe it's not a terrible idea, but it's just, I still felt like with the paywall, it.
Well, it's almost like a punishment. Like we were the ones that were watching all along and now we're being punished because we were watching all along.
Yeah.
I guess too.
Well, but I just want to finish really quick.
I'm sorry. Yes, because of course.
The Twitter feed that people are talking about as it like that's similar and is about the Oscars is that somebody is saying like, why don't you do this thing where you have, you know, 2.5 hours of the creative arts and, you know, all of the categories that they were taking away that so many of us actually want to watch. Then you have like a sort of like a halftime show. You do all the musical numbers in the middle. And that way all the people who want to watch that get all of that. And then you have targeted advertising for that portion. And so then for the last like 2 hours or so that it's not so long, you do all the acting categories and the directing and whatever else, like the people that you're trying to pull that never really were watching.
Sure.
Can now ingest. And I was like, that's actually a pretty decent idea.
I guess the point I was trying to make also is that they've already been catering to the people that can afford to go to theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not the 99%, right?
Yeah.
That is the people, you know, I was doing research for this next episode that we're doing. And the average cost of a ticket for a Broadway show in 1986 was $30. And I literally went, oh my God, I'd see so much theater if it was $100.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, I think the cheapest you can get is usually right around $85 to $90. And that's in the nosebleed section or maybe limited view, right?
Well, it depends on what you're seeing. Cause you know me, I go hard for a cheap ticket. I can figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But you know, like we've already allowed for the people that can already afford it to make those decisions.
Music like, Man at $600 a pop.
No. And that, I mean, just the idea of that makes me want to boycott the entire experience.
I get Broadway briefing every morning and it said, Music Man tops box office. And I was like, at $600 a pop? Of course they are.
It was 12 tickets. Of course.
No. I know.
Damn. I can't.
Like,
but why do we want to support that?
I know. But this is what I think about. I think about Music Man at $600 a pop. And then I think about Slave Play and how hard Jeremy goes trying to make sure everybody can see stuff.
Yeah.
And those types of folks, that's what makes me continue to go back to the theater because he's like, how can I get you in the seat for free? Yeah. How can I, you know, because he really cares. He really wants to have people be able to experience theater. Yeah. And so this leads me into the last thing we'll talk about on this episode is So I went to Delaware and I saw this new musical called Otherworld, which was written by Hunter Bell, who wrote the book, and then Jeff Bowen and Anne McNamee, who wrote the music and lyrics. And this show is, it's about a group of video game players. Listen, I just want to preface this by saying I don't know crap about video games. So words are going to come out of my mouth for you, like, video game nerds, that you'll just be like, Ebony, that is a hot mess. What are you even saying? That doesn't even make sense. Listen, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. So
shame.
Whatever. You can at me and tell me what the real words are, because I don't know. So the thing about this show is that it is so radically inclusive. It's amazing.
Okay.
And so that, like, you had the show opens and, like, the opening number is just like all these different people with different gender expressions, different abilities, different body shapes, different skin colors, just every ages, everything you could possibly think of.
Yeah.
That's how the show opens. Okay.
Awesome.
And they're sitting there and they're playing, they're talking about, like, you know, beating a world and freeing some people in this video game world or whatever. And it's just like, immediately you're like, everyone can see themselves on stage.
That's awesome.
Immediately, as soon as it opens. And then the story is, so, like, the lead character, his mother created the game with someone else. And so the other person also is no longer with us. And so he goes to try to find him because they don't know if he's dead or alive, and meets the daughter. So the daughter, for people who don't play even one video game or cell phone game or anything like myself, she's our way in.
Okay.
And so this garage is, like, filled with, like, all these sketches and stuff. And the lead guy, he's, like, obsessed with it. And she's like, I don't know what this is. What is any of this? I don't care. She just doesn't care. And I'm like, this is how I feel about video games. And they end up falling into the video game, right? And so the woman who is, like, what would you call her? She's sort of like the queen of this world. It's okay. Like, that's what I would call it. She's Black. And we are so often not in anything futurist or in anything fantastical or video games that it's just like, I'm grown. And I was like, it just continued to inspire me to, like, make the things that I want to make.
Yeah.
And so it's just, like, really beautiful, really beautifully done, really fun, very inclusive. And they were talking about how they had a group of school kids come in for one of the shows, and they had a talk back after, and the kids were just so beside themselves.
I bet.
They loved it so much. And they said the kids were saying things like, I've never seen myself on stage before. I didn't know I could be in a musical. I mean, with all types of disabilities and body shapes and races and gender expressions. I mean, specifically because one of the lead characters, you know, they are non-gender conforming. Mm-hmm. And so there were some young people in the audience who also were, and they were like, I can just, like, be myself and, like, be in a musical. And it's just,
you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Love. And so it's things like that's why we keep going, because it feels few and far between, but it's happening. And if we keep being loud and we keep making stuff and we keep, you know, making noise about how we're here. Oh, gosh, that was the best part. Okay. The last song
Yeah.
Is the last song is called This World Is Our World. So you see everyone in the cast, like I said, all gender expressions, races, abilities, ages, everything, singing about how this world belongs to them. In a time where, like, the world is telling us we don't belong here. And you're just like, I can't. This is the greatest.
I'm getting goosebumps just hearing about it. That's awesome. I will say that it is slightly bittersweet in my heart. And I think that that's just because of jealousy. Because, you know, at 40 years old, we never saw that. Right. I think into my 20s, maybe then you'd see the one fat track. I hate that terminology, but that's what they were called. Like, that's what they're known as, right? There's that one female, white female that is overweight, that serves the purpose of being the comic relief or the best friend or the mean girl or whatever they are. But there's that one character in every show. And then she understudies the old lady in the show as well.
Right. Yeah. Like,
that's the formula. And so I guess I saw myself that way, but it's not fair. Like, I didn't, like, I wanted to see, you know, I would have loved to go to a show and have the curtain open and just be like, oh my God, I'm there. Oh my God, I'm there too. Oh my God, I could be any of these people.
Yeah.
I love that. So that's, you know, I'm a little jealous, but I think that's so, so amazing for all the little youngins coming up now who can choose. Who can just say, yeah, that I can be that. That's me.
Can I offer, though, like, even though, yes, the youngins are seeing it again, it's all ages.
That's true.
So even that's 40, true. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because you can be in it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of that show is just that, like, you know, and so then what happened was, like, all these kids were so inspired and, like, were, like, begging their parents to come. And so, like, a bunch of the kids brought their parents. And it was just so interesting to hear the stories of, like, older people, like, into it and, like, calling out in the middle of the show, you know, because they would be like, oh, Charnette, who was the Black woman who was, like, the queen of the world. That's what I call it. She said there was this woman, it was a Black woman who came one night, and there's a part where, like, she transforms from, you know, the one who just, she's handing out all the awards and then becomes a warrior and, like, takes off this robe and, like, has this, like, sword and stuff. And she said this Black older Black lady called out, "Yes, girl, you got this." And I was like, I love so much.
Yes. You better. Yes. Oh, that's spectacular.
Isn't it?
I love that. I love it so much.
So that's, I feel like that's a really positive place to end this intermission-sode.
Yes.
More shows like Otherworld, more inclusivity like that, like radical inclusivity, which will hopefully not be radical and just be how it is.
Yeah.
That's what we strive for.
I would love to hear from our listeners.
Yeah.
If there is some show coming up, it does not have to be Broadway. It could be anywhere. It could be, like, in a regional theater in your hometown. But, like, is there anything that's happening around you that you are super excited and hopeful about, or that makes you feel like we are taking a turn into a much more diverse and inclusive theater world?
Yes. Yeah. Please add us. You all know where to go. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and at the email.
Facebook.
And everywhere. So just add us.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABway and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Your intermission-sode has now concluded.
Shut up, sit down, and turn off your cell phones. Or we'll tell Patti LuPone.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.